I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Wake up!
Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
Big day. Be more people watching you what we're wearing
yeah,
these days.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent news story, and I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
According to the press releases that have been out there this morning, the Mully and Haw Show will be joining and being simulcast on the Chicago Sports Network.
What?
Look, I'm on TV, y'all. Check it out. I want to give a shout out to all my peeps.
From 7 to 9 every morning, they're going to do our 2 hours, 7 to 9, and we're joining the team. And it's going to be something that is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I'm on TV. Oh, man, I'll be a star, son.
But we're just going to have to, wave to the camera maybe every now and then. I don't know.
We're going to try.
Probably not.
To not be self-conscious. I think that's the key.
I don't know how to put this, but I'm kind of a big deal. People know me.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
We got too many people talking on TV about us.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score at long last, David. At long last, our national nightmare is over, and the NBA season begins today.
Morning, Mully. Yeah, happy Tuesday.
Yes.
Seems very early to start the NBA season, but we do have two games tonight. Knicks, Celtics, T-Wolves, Lakers. Bulls start tomorrow night right here on The Score and the Chicago Sports Network. We have Billy Donovan at 7:25 today. Looking forward to that. The biggest story in the NBA tonight is, I think, something somewhat remarkable. LeBron James and Bronny James.
Yeah.
Likely to be on the court at the same time for the Los Angeles Lakers.
Incredible that LeBron has so much power, he can have his son make the NBA. Is that what you mean?
That's what you mean.
Oh.
Yeah.
No, I think it's great. I think it's going to be a family affair. I believe the Griffies are going to the game. Pretty sure that they will be in attendance.
It's an event. I think that the Griffies going adds a little gravitas to it because they obviously
legitimately belonged in the
They legitimately were definitely in the league at the same time. They played in the same outfield, I believe. Ken Griffey Sr. and Jr. And there have been other father-son combos that have done this or not at the same time.
Have you chatted at all with LeBron about playing with Bronny? Has he asked your advice? Have you given some advice from your own experiences?
No, we haven't talked yet. I'm actually going to go to the game. I'm going to take my dad. First father and son to play baseball now. First father and son to play basketball. So it's a big deal for my dad and I to be there. We made history. Now we get to watch history. So that's what's going to be cool about it.
That's pretty neat.
That is pretty neat.
It's Griffey Jr.
That's good.
Former White Sox.
Yeah, former White Sox outfielder. He played a little bit with the Seattle Mariners, too. He is going to see. And, yeah, there are going to be questions about Bronny's legitimacy on an NBA roster. And maybe it won't last any longer than LeBron's tenure as a Laker. But still pretty cool. I think it's fine that he engineered all this. I don't have a big problem as much as some other people. I think it's kind of interesting.
Oh, I don't have a problem with it at all. I'm just joking around. I think it's fun. I think it's great. I got literally no beef with LeBron getting his son. If a man, what was the great Richard Daley line? The original mayor. If a man can't help his son, then what has the country come to?
Right.
A man should be able to help his son.
Yeah, I have probably more questions, legitimate questions about how J.J. Redick became the Lakers coach than maybe how LeBron. Bronny James became the 15th member on the roster.
Careful. He'll go blue on you.
He will go blue.
Yeah, he's done it.
Lakers tonight, though, they start their season. Who knows where it will end? I'm curious to see what the Knicks look like. It does seem a little bit early for the NBA, but they are playing NHL hockey. This is the confluence of all the seasons. Everything's colliding. So much happening at once.
Yes, yes. It's all coming together. It's actually very fun.
It's good. Thank goodness the World Series doesn't start till Friday.
Well...
I mean, gosh, the World Series starts on Friday. Isn't that crazy? Good stuff could take place before Friday. Really important stories for us.
What?
I don't want to say.
What? Do you know something?
I don't want to put the Malecki on it.
Do you know something?
I don't want to put the Malecki on it. Have you read the pick six questions?
Hold on. Hold on. Let me see. Let me prep here. I did read the pick six questions. The White Sox manager list is, we went over it yesterday. It's like 10 deep.
I understand.
It's 10 deep.
Do they name one?
I don't know.
Before Friday's first pitch?
I doubt it.
Or are they going to have to wait longer?
They'll have to wait. They asked permission from the Rangers to talk to two of their bench coaches, Will Venable and...
Wise guy.
Will Venable was a former coach on the Cubs staff from 2018 to 2020.
Yes.
And so they have a lot of guys without experience. I think the only guy with experience that we are linking to this job right now that they have talked to or shown interest in is Skip Schumacher. We'll save
Buck Showalter. Come on now.
Who linked him besides Buck Showalter?
So it's linked.
All right, we'll wait till the pick six because we don't want to exhaust all the good stuff.
That's what I was trying to do. I was trying to tease something, and then you're like,
"Sorry,
what? What do you mean? Oh, let me read the question aloud."
I did not read the question aloud.
You basically did.
I know we talked about it. It'll happen. I don't think it'll happen before Friday. Do you?
I mean, isn't there a moratorium once they start playing?
What's the hurry?
What do you mean? What's the hurry? Has it been, like, when did we know they were going to lose, set a record for losses?
April 15th?
Exactly. Okay. Who's in a hurry?
My point is the timetable is irrelevant when you talk about the manager. As somebody filled out the lineup card on opening day, we're good.
Okay, that's accurate. But when you say we're firing the manager and this guy has no chance of getting the job, then you pretty much start looking, don't you? And if you didn't start looking while the guy was losing 20-something games, then you weren't paying attention.
Point is they've been looking for a long time, since they fired Pedro Grifol. I thought they'd have somebody now. But they might be waiting for maybe somebody on the Dodgers staff to get freed up, perhaps Clayton McCullough. Donnie Ecker was the other member of the Rangers crew or staff that they wanted to interview. Okay. The Bruce Bochy bunch.
Yeah.
Bochy's bunch.
That's fine. What's wrong with Bruce?
What's wrong with Bruce Bochy?
I mean, how come they didn't want him? Never mind.
They didn't want him because they hired Pedro Grifol instead. See, now we're going down a path we don't want to go.
Well, this is the point.
Thank you.
This is the point.
Thank you. By the way, while we're on the subject.
Yes, please.
Did Governor Pritzker address the stadium issue on Monday? I believe he did.
I believe he did.
At the end of some remarks, he was asked by an intrepid reporter that caught up to him about the idea that the White Sox would be looking at the 78 and where that stood in terms of the quest for public subsidies.
It sure does sound like the White Sox are not going to stay. What do you think?
Well, you never know. I mean, I think, you know, sometimes these things get mentioned in public because, you know, they're trying to spur some action. So I don't know whether it sounds like they're leaving or not. I can just say that the same challenges exist for, putting public money to a private business. I mean, in the kind of size that people are looking for. We're always helping private businesses here, I might add, right? So sometimes it's just infrastructure, building the, you know, putting the street light in front of the business, or building the street or the highway. Helping build the infrastructure for transportation for a manufacturing facility. So we do that kind of thing all the time. But $1 billion or, you know, so investment in a private business that's, for a private business rather, that is, you know, owned by wealthy people and is a highly valued enterprise, seems like the taxpayers rightly should say, don't we have other uses for that capital?
Wow. Yeah. So that's a pretty lengthy answer and a long way to say no.
Well, it's not $1 billion. It's like 1.7, I believe, because Jerry has said that he will throw in a couple hundred thousand. So if the bill is 1.9, you really only need the government to kick in $1.7 billion.
I know what you're saying, and that is kind of amusing.
I think that's accurate.
I don't know if we have a final tally or a number that we know the White Sox are in for,
okay,
or would be in for. I think I've seen ranges. I think that is why, when we go back to, in all seriousness, when we go back to what Jerry Reinsdorf indicated near the end of the season in the statement, and he said he will at one point address everything, address people. That's what I think is one of the biggest reasons why he should. Let's clarify exactly what the White Sox would have in terms of their own stake in this project, because I think that is ambiguous right now.
Versus the ask.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and then we can all do the math, and we can all make our own judgments then. Right now, I do think there's a range of guesstimates about what the White Sox are in for, because people surrounding the project would say that Jerry Reinsdorf is going to be invested with his own personal stake and have some skin in the game, if you will. And others will suggest that, well, not as much as he needs to. So somewhere in between, maybe there's a compromise position. But I would like to hear from Jerry Reinsdorf himself as far as what that means and what he's, how far he's willing to go.
And the Bears, theirs is a private public enterprise where they'd put in $2 billion, but they would need $2.7 billion?
According to the original plan, the estimates, we've all seen those estimates kind of grow as people have kind of studied them. But right now, the Bears are working with, under the assumption that it's a $4.7 billion project. They would kick in $2 billion of their own, and $2.7 then would be financed from the public sector.
And then whenever anything was held there, they would get all the money.
All the money.
I'm just trying to do the math.
No, the math does add up, and everything equals McCaskey's.
Okay. That's sort of what I had thought.
Yeah. Well, as we heard sort of in the tone from Governor Pritzker, a billionaire himself, that when billionaires ask for assistance, it doesn't mean you have to provide it.
Yeah.
And that seems to be the tenor in terms of not only in Chicago, but when you look around the country and professional sports stadium projects, this is becoming more and more common to hear the word no.
But it was a very long no.
He's an eloquent guy.
Yeah. Okay.
He's got a pretty vast vocabulary.
It seems so.
And he did.
There were many words.
There were many words. You know what happens when you hear a very long no? You tend to wonder how much the speaker enjoys saying
For the no.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Like he wasn't agonized. He wasn't like, nobody had to twist his arm to go into that detail.
Let me tell you a story that I'm going to take you down this road, and then we're going to go, and there's a twist, and the twist is no.
Because?
No.
Thank you.
I prefer the no than the explanation before the no.
I do too.
Don't you just kind of...
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
No.
Okay.
Because no.
Thanks, Steve.
All right.
Does that mean the Rays aren't going to play there either?
Apparently. No.
Sully's going to be so disappointed.
Yeah, apparently no Rays.
That was such a good column.
Yeah.
Such a fun idea. But I do think that the 78 will... Here's what I don't know. Last thing on this, draw a distinction between the Bears and the White Sox, Molly. I wonder, because the White Sox project or quest for a new ballpark there in the South Loop, because it's linked to a broader project, the $9 billion investment in the South Loop related Midwest, I wonder if that has more legs than the Bears because of that. And the Bears' ask seems so ambitious and so unrealistic that I do wonder if there's a distinction to be drawn between both of them.
The other element to it, and we haven't really spoken enough about it, but the Bears, for lack of a better term, we'll call it their project or their ambition, would include things like a hotel and a casino, right? Like things that would not, within the city charter, really be acceptable for the lakefront as the city fathers planned it.
Well, that certainly wasn't what the original vision would have included. No.
Yeah.
I don't think
haven't
that.
You heard that?
Yes. The Warren Project would include hotels and a casino from the way I understand it.
Right.
And so the pushback has been, and certainly it'll get louder if it goes further from the Friends of the Parks, I think that this was not what anybody originally envisioned.
Yes.
Even though God kissed the lakefront, I don't think that he planned to put a casino there.
Well, I mean, there is, if you have a glass building, a bird can fly into it. If you have a casino, people can lose a ton of dough at a casino. It's been known to happen.
And the glass building gets bigger.
You worry more about the whales getting wiped out.
Yeah,
I'm not talking about any actual animals.
These are interesting times, though, because of the not the race to Springfield, but we've talked about it now for going on a better part of a year about the shared ambition, separate issues, separate projects, but both the same thought in mind. The Bears and the White Sox want a new home.
And it's fascinating because at the United Center, as we've talked about, they are doing a new revitalization of the downtown using that building as sort of an anchor for the number of people that will go there to watch the Bulls and Blackhawks. But there's no public ask. They are taking, parking lots that surround the place, and they are building parking structures and then using the land itself to build up the downtown area.
It's called the 1901 Project. Yes. It is a redevelopment of that part of the Near West Side, and it's a combination of the Wirtz family and the Reinsdorf families coming together and doing something that is prodigious and profound and lasting. So that is another thing going on around the United Center, which has been a wildly successful building.
Mm. Yeah. And again, I think that when you start thinking about the parking problem and you start thinking about buildings and you need places to go and to park, that's tons of land and that's very hefty real estate. And so if you can figure out a way to take care of the parking issue, whether it be subterranean, whatever, that buys you tons of land.
That means underground, right?
That means underground.
Yeah,
but it also means that above ground you will have all sorts of places to
expand.
No
question about it. Yeah. United Center will be hopping tonight. There'll be hockey there.
Yes, there will.
Blackhawks are back home. Philip Kurashev is on the bench, and they look for another victory.
Isn't it?
I think it is interesting. Yeah. And we don't talk a lot about how Luke Richardson goes about picking his lineups and roster, but he is called out. Philip Kurashev, who was a second-line center, last year enjoyed life on the same line as Connor Bedard because of all the additions, moved to the second line, and he's not getting the job done. And Luke Richardson said that in very plain English on Monday, and that's interesting.
Yeah, it's not something that happens all the time, although we're seeing a lot of people calling out people. I don't know that I like it necessarily. I don't mind coaches doing it, but when quarterbacks call out a receiver, that kind of
don't like that.
Looks wrong.
Yeah, it's a bad look for you're referring to Aaron Rodgers.
I am referring to Aaron Rodgers, oddly enough.
He's called out his receiver last week. He called out the media this week. Who's he going to call out next week? I don't think it will be himself.
Yeah, and the thing is, next week I think they play the Patriots, so I'm not sure there's anyone he's going to have to call.
They're soft.
The Patriots?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the coach.
Yeah, it's the coach said.
Yeah. That's
imagine that.
No, I can't imagine that.
You talk about calling people out.
Well, I mean, if you say that about a football team, is there a greater insult you can
give? Because it lasts too.
Yeah.
That's a label that will stick.
Oh.
And those are words he'll kind of come to regret unless they turn things around. You don't want to be that guy, do you?
He
hasn't accomplished anything as a head coach.
You know, he did play in the league. And he does know where
Fair
he
enough.
Speaks.
Fair enough.
But I would be very hesitant. There are rules in the locker room about calling people out publicly. You can do that privately, and there's nothing wrong with him telling them that he thinks they're soft.
Maybe that's what surprised me, was that a player who had that kind of a career in that organization was as publicly critical in a way that was derogatory. You don't call a team soft because nobody forgets that label.
And it is the most damning label in football. If you say that a guy shies away from contact, or if you say a guy, you know, is a coward, which is what you're saying.
It's essentially what you're saying about your team, about your roster.
I don't know how you cast.
I'm going to call you a coward on Sunday night, and then next week, let's go out and play for me.
And then I'll give you a game ball if you do well.
I don't think it goes a long way.
I don't know that that's going
to
work.
The Bears will welcome the Patriots to Soldier Field on November 10th, and they will be very glad to see them.
Yeah, I think that's a good team to have on your schedule.
It is. Even though the Bears have the toughest schedule remaining of all the teams in the league.
Well, that's because they haven't played any division games.
Facts are facts.
They nonetheless do not have a very difficult schedule, top to bottom, outside their division.
I know, but
it's not like they're playing all the returning.
They have yet to play a team in the division, so I think the remainder of the schedule is a wake up call.
And David, every team within their division will have had a game against every other team in their division
before they play the Bears. I know. That's tough.
So that puts them at a disadvantage.
So the Bears have the Commanders, and then they have the Cardinals, and they have the Softies, and then they go against the Packers.
Wow, the Softies. I tell you what, you better beat that team.
Yeah. I mean, the coach has given up on them. You can't.
Oh, boy.
That's a gimme. So, a lot of stuff going on. Good night of Monday Night Football.
Yeah. You know, the one game was excellent. The other game was a lot of field goals.
I'm glad that I didn't watch that because you had to do a little maneuvering with the apps, and it was on, what, ESPN Plus?
Did you watch the Manning cast, or did you watch?
No, I watched the regular. I like Troy
Aikman.
You don't like
the Manning cast.
No, I do like the Manning cast, but I appreciate and respect Troy Aikman and Joe Buck more than I like the Manning cast.
I could watch Bill Belichick watch a football game 24/7. I just love that.
I think they talk over each other too much.
What's funny is I think that Peyton is excellent until he has Bill Belichick on. Then I'm like, Peyton, be quiet. Bill just said something.
Was it good?
If you like a quarterback dropping back to pass, surveying the field, buying himself time, and hearing the old head coach throw it away, right as the guy throws an interception.
That's funny.
It was fantastic.
Because he
has the internal clock that the quarterback lacks.
It would be good theater. I enjoyed Troy Aikman breaking down Lamar Jackson and Baker Mayfield, and I like those guys in the booth together. So I rarely stray from that broadcast.
I really enjoy Bill. And I know that I'm not supposed to, and I understand all the other elements involved, but I think he knows the game so well, and I love hearing him say, you know, Parcells always said, if a guy couldn't tackle, you couldn't have him on your team. Now, I get the value of a cover corner and then go on about something. I mean, I can watch that stuff all day because it's wisdom. The man is spewing football wisdom.
He does spew football wisdom. I'll give him that.
Yeah. And even, you know, when he's on that, whatever that other inside the NFL, when he does the classroom thing.
Now, that's worth watching.
That's kind of what he's doing.
Yeah.
In his other venues as well, David. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's an element
he's
of that.
He's a teacher.
Oh,
he's a teacher.
So good. It's so good when he's in front of the room.
He's enjoying life.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess.
Definitely. He's definitely.
That's the rumor.
That's more than a rumor.
Okay.
I've seen the photos.
I don't know.
He's enjoying life.
I choose not to speak of it. We've got to get to the pick six. We got all the top stories of the day. We're going to tear them apart and chew into them and have some fun mulling Haw on the score.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Allo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
What is your take on Washington coach Dan Quinn calling rookie quarterback Jaden Daniels week to week with a rib injury, saying the team is hopeful he'll play against the Bears? What is Washington doing? Is it the smart thing to do? Anything promising?
I got to be honest with you. I thought that week to week implied immediately that he was not going to be available for the Bears game. Day-to-day means we're fighting through the week to try to get there. Week-to-week is he could be out for 2 or 3 weeks. That's what week-to-week means in my world. So I was surprised that Dan Quinn said that, frankly. I wonder how things will, if that designation will change or how things will change Wednesday, Thursday, whenever we get a final word. I am at this point thinking that that he's not going to play on Sunday, that the Bears kind of dodged a bullet with the guy, or maybe not. Maybe they really should be playing him and really challenge themselves, but I don't think he's going to play in the game when you call a guy week to week. Week to week implies a longer period of time than day to day. Again, it's probably semantics, and I don't know enough about Quinn to read into that, but I do. I think that what he said was that they were hopeful that he could get back for the game, but he also said that they were going to be smart about it, which implies he's not playing. So I think two of the three things he was saying implied the guy's not ready to play on Sunday.
It screams gamesmanship to me. There's no rush. They don't have to say anything. He's going to pop on that injury report on Wednesday, as you pointed out, Mully, and they'll say he was, you know, my prediction, he was limited in what he did. And this will go down right to the wire, and we may not even know at noon, right? Because when are they inactives, right? They're going to drag this thing out and make the Bears prepare for two different guys.
Maybe, but I'll say this. I thought the opposite. I don't think it's gamesmanship. I think it's tipping your hand. And I kind of agree with you, Mully. I was surprised that Dan Quinn, affable Dan Quinn, was like, oh, we're not going to take any chances. We're going to be very careful. He's week to week. If you're playing games and you're trying to mess with your opponent's strategy in terms of preparation, you're saying day to day, it's not bad. And I think that they're the best news for the NFL and for the Washington Commanders is that it doesn't seem like it's something that is a significant rib injury. But it's also something you don't want to rush back with somebody that slight and that important. Look, Washington is in the midst of a surprising season themselves. They have playoff aspirations that are real. They've got a franchise quarterback they have every responsibility to protect. They're going to protect him. I would be surprised if he plays. And that's just based on one press conference, and maybe I'm falling for it, Dustin. I don't know. But I do think that listening to NFL coaches for a long time, if they are planning to play that game, they're going practice to practice. We'll see what we have. I think they're taking the conservative view here, as they should, as yep. I would.
Yep.
And the Bears likely are going to see Marcus Mariota, which doesn't really change how important this game is, and they should not take him lightly. He'd be making his 75th career NFL start if wow. he does start. So I think the the Commanders are leaning towards sitting Jaden Daniels and starting Marcus Mariota?
Oh, boy. Good question.
Voice of Coach Watt said he's here at 7:40 for the start of two big segments. The Bears have the toughest schedule remaining if you factor in the winning percentage of the remaining opponents. That's the downside of playing in the NFL's toughest division. Without having played a division game yet, with three games to go before the NFC North schedule starts, how prepared do you think the Bears are for this challenge?
I think that's another way of asking if your expectations about the Bears season have changed based on their 4-2 start at the bye week. Did you do self-scouting or introspection and think, okay, now I'm going to look at this season a little differently? I don't know that I am. I think that they still can have a good season, a winning record, and miss the playoffs and feel okay about it. I'm not saying that week to week we're going to abandon those ideas and never talk about the playoffs and sound like Jim Mora because it's so absurd. No, it is realistic, and they should have those kind of goals. But I don't know that they're any better equipped to handle things in the toughest division in football that because they start out 4-2 against the soft portion of their schedule. They need to take care of business in the next 3 weeks. Realistically, I think the Bears go into the teeth of their schedule having won two of the next three games. The Cardinals won't be any pushover in Arizona. Sunday will not be easy with or without Jaden Daniels. And I think you have the softies coming into Soldier Field. You take care of the Patriots and you'll be okay. But you've got to win one of those two other games before you get to the Packers. So I think 4-2 becomes 6-3, ideally. And then you take your chances in the division. You want to split in the division. I think that's almost, given how tough the division is, the best you can hope for at this point as we sit here October 22nd.
Well, I think they've got a shot to be 7-2 going into that Green Bay game. They can win all three of these games. And if health is a thing, if they can stay healthy and continue to win it, if each week, if the QB takes a step forward each week as he has so far through these games, think about how good he's going to be in a month from now, right? 3 weeks from now. Now, the tough part is when you get to that November 17th game, you've got Green Bay, Minnesota, Detroit, all three teams in a 10-day window. You're playing three division games, the first time you're playing those division games back to back to back in a short amount of time. That's going to be really tough.
Yeah, I mean, this is a reflection of how good the division is. So you're playing all those teams twice. So you're, of course, it's going to look like you got the hardest schedule left. They still have the Niners. Niners lost Brandon Ayuk yesterday. He had been ill, but it turns out he blew out his knee. I mean, it was like one of the more strange sort of elements that I've heard in a while. He's got to have reconstructive knee surgery. Turns out he signed a hell of a contract. You know, he held out.
Good timing.
Well, I mean, it's incredible. So he's the big winner. They've got Seattle left on their schedule, right? I mean, listen. Here's the thing about division games. Division games, you are supposed to be very familiar with each opponent, and you're supposed to be able to win some of those games just because you are so familiar with them and you're not intimidated by them, etc. So, unfortunately, Jared Goff looks like he's the MVP of the league right now. These things change fairly dramatically as the year goes on, but right now, snapshot, he's playing as well as anybody in the league right now. And that's a problem when you think about having that in front of you. You can't beat the flower.
You know him well too,
and you just haven't beat him yet at all. So that's a problem. And Minnesota a lot better than they've looked, a lot better than you thought they might be. But they played Minnesota pretty tough. They could split with Minnesota. They could split with Detroit. I just don't know what they're going to do with the flower. If they could win that game, that would really set a shot across
the November
foul.
Game?
First division
that
game.
Would be
if
huge.
They came out and won that game, that would let the division
statement.
Know. Yes.
Then let's talk on that Monday about how we've changed our thoughts.
That's exactly right.
Maybe that's something Eberflus can clear up a little bit later on today, but that's a good question.
That's the voice of Brad Biggs, Biggs Time, 9 a.m. How about Bears coach Matt Eberflus revealing that the safety, Jaquan Brisker, still has, quote, a couple more steps to go in concussion protocol, and that cornerback Kyler Gordon working through his hamstring injury. But cornerback Tyreek Stevenson, long snapper Scott Daly were on the field for the walkthrough on Monday at Halas Hall.
The concussion protocol thing was very interesting because this is outside the Bears venue. There's nothing, no matter how much you want to, there are certain things that he has to do, Brisker, in order to get cleared by independent doctors and be able to play in the NFL. At least that's the idea. At least that is the plan, and that's the way the league just tried to lay it out. So I will accept what the league is saying about that. So it doesn't matter how much want to, how much you want to kind of hope a guy's right. There's nothing you can do about that one. That's a problem. It sounds as if Kyler Gordon's, if a guy's working on a hamstring injury, that means the guy's got a hamstring injury and he's going to be out with a hamstring injury. Sounds like Tyreek Stevenson is coming back. That's a good one. That is good to hear that. Let's hope that holds up through the rest of the week. As far as the long snapper is concerned, maybe that injury is not as serious. I don't really worry about that. You have signed another player and you got another guy that may come back eventually.
And you got commit.
And you got the special teams player of the year, of the week. That was funny, Komet talking about that, because he seemed to understand there'll be a lot of people miffed about it, but he'll take it. He was very good. But I just think that it's right now you're kind of two for two, and the one doesn't really matter as much. So you hope that Stevenson's better, but I wouldn't count on Brisker. It's possible, but I wouldn't count on it. And it doesn't sound like Gordon's possible.
I'm really worried about this Jaquan Brisker injury. We talked last week about possible trade scenarios that the Bears might make. And yesterday, Eberflus admitted that the phone's ringing up there. They're talking to people. I think that's what they need to be. They need to be bringing in a safety. And if Jamal Adams is out there on the street for nothing, I have no idea why he's not up at Halas Hall going through some workouts and doing some interviews. Because if they don't have Brisker for the rest of this season, that's a big loss.
I think that's a little alarmist.
Yeah.
I think that we heard from Matt Eberflus. I heard from Matt Eberflus, and maybe this is coach speak, but it sounds like Jaquan Brisker is going through the proper channels and taking the necessary steps to get back on the field. And I think we also heard different story, same idea, from Tua. And players look at concussions like, I'm not saying this is right. My sense is that Jaquan Brisker is looking at this as an ankle injury, and he's coming back following protocol. He'll be back on the field when they allow him back on the field, but he's going to play the same way. I think he's going to have to change the way he plays if he wants to stay on the field long term. But nonetheless, I don't know that I'm as pessimistic as that makes it sound about Jaquan Brisker being back on the field. He could be on the road back. And Tyreek Stevenson is already back. Kyler Gordon is the iffy one. I think he's as indispensable as any player on that defense because of the variety of roles that he plays and how he's good blitzing, how he's good against the run, how he's good in coverage. He's good at everything. He needs to be back. He needs to be healthy. If he needs to take a Sunday to get healthier for the stretch run, then he should do it. I do think, Dustin, that they're pretty good at the depth at the safety position. Jamal Adams... I don't know how he fits. I don't know how he would go in a role-playing situation if he would be happy with that. I think Hicks has been okay. They got Jonathan Owens. Don't forget him. And they've got guys who can step in and play roles as they get healthier. Terrell Smith is back, too. I know there's another guy. They have depth at the position. And then after hearing Flusi yesterday, they got the best defensive secondary coaches in America. So I think that everything is going to come together. Just got to be patient and hopeful with Brisker.
Yeah, I think it's a good question.
That's the voice of Billy Donovan. Set yourself a reminder, 7:25 with Mullion Hall. What are your thoughts on Talen Horton-Tucker having claimed the Bulls' final roster spot for the 25 season? Hercules, as he's nicknamed, averaged 13 points, 2.4 boards, and 3.5 assists while shooting 40% in the preseason.
This is one of the better stories of the preseason in my book. You got a Simeon product who talked yesterday about the joy he feels in making his boyhood team. The team he cheered for growing up in Chicago, watching Derrick Rose, watching Jabari Parker, watching former Simeon stars put on the same uniform he's going to wear this year. This is a great story because he may not contribute that much. Talen Horton-Tucker might be the 15th guy on the bench, and he might have a lot of DNP CDs on his resume this season. But I don't think he's going to be one of those guys that mopes around because he does play a limited role on the Bulls team. That said, if you go to him, I think we've seen in the preseason, we also have seen this in his career, he's not going to see a shot. He hasn't met a shot he doesn't like, and he can fill it up a little bit. He can score. He'll give you 10 minutes and maybe 8 points. That's good. That's the NBA. That's what you want. So even though this end of the roster, the back end of it, the last couple guys, I like this move. It's popular with the fans. You got a guy that appreciates where he is, and he still can play.
It's a great story. Love the local guy. Made good. We really like that here. I like the nickname. It's fun. He, you know, for a guy who's like a NBA bat, he kind of appears because of his build, like he doesn't belong out there, but he gets up and down the court very well, and he puts the ball in the basket, and that's what you need when you need a little instant offense, right? I think that's what this guy can deliver in 5-6 minute chunks. He can deliver you a couple of points, so I like this move. Good for him.
Oh, it's a fantastic story because not only is the childhood hero thing, the whole growing up here thing, it's that he earned it. THT can play, man. That guy can hoop. He's a good player, and it's fun to watch him. And he's a young guy, and he's got a future. I like him a lot. I like that he can do so many different things, and I just like the look of him, the cut of his jib, whatever way you want to put it. I think he could be, you know, a cult figure at some point here. I love that he made this roster. Love it.
Different question on a different topic.
Mike Florio, 844, for a trip around the NFL. Do you believe the White Sox will name their manager this week before the World Series starts on Friday? Given the number of candidates mentioned and the uncertainty about who has actually been interviewed, is it unrealistic to believe the White Sox will be ready, or should they have been done by now given the amount of time they've already had in the process?
Yeah, it's an interesting idea. I don't know what the delay is, other than I don't know that anybody wants the gig, right? It's not a great job. It's not one where you're going to do a lot. There's not a lot of promising talent. You understand you're going to lose 100 games going into this after creating one of the worst regular season records, the worst regular season record in the history of Major League Baseball. So, you know, if you can get somebody who's okay losing 100 games and feels like they're going to make a big enough difference, I'm not sure that I have all the faith in the world that they know what they're doing, they know what they're looking at, and they know exactly what they need to be able to prevent another 2024 season. I just don't know that I trust everyone involved in this thing, and so we tend to say, well, take as long as you need, take longer. But I don't know if you reach a point where there's sort of, I mean, if you're waiting on a guy and you wanna, I don't believe you should be waiting on a guy. I don't believe that there's anybody that is a better baseball man than some of the people that are out there. It's a really important job to get the right person at, to get a person that is going to be their own man, to not try to get a puppet. I think they went through that process and it failed. I think they tried to hire someone and it blew up on them. And then when they got the opportunity, they went for a guy they knew they could control. And then unfortunately, when everyone was run out, there was no one to help him, and he was left to his own device, and he just wasn't the guy. They hired the wrong guy. So you need the anti of what you had. And the very fact that Grady Sizemore did as well as he did just underscored how poorly situated the guy ahead of him was. And I don't want to pick on Pedro here, but they need someone that is their own man, that has their own voice, that has their own idea. I would say a guy like Buck Showalter, as disastrous that might end up being because he's a disciplinarian, I think he would teach the game and he would work on trying to bring discipline to it, and he'd be his own.
I'm surprised you like that idea.
I just need different.
Yeah.
And I'm going for the opposite.
I think this is really interesting, and I think, Mully, you mentioned somebody's name there, Grady Sizemore, and that might be part of why they haven't acted yet, because they might be waiting on somebody that they're going to talk to that's going to knock their socks off, because I have Grady Sizemore waiting in the wings. Grady Sizemore is not getting an interview. There's only two openings, right? The Marlins and the Sox?
Right now.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, the opening.
Reds hired Francona.
Right. And the hot candidate is the guy who walked away from the Marlins, who supposedly wouldn't want the White Sox job, right? And now if they're waiting on a guy, then you think, well, then it's this Clayton McCullough, right? The first base coach
for
the Dodgers.
That would be conventional wisdom,
right.
Yes.
So is it down to Grady Sizemore sticking around, or we haven't had a chance yet to talk to Clayton McCullough? We've done our research, but we got to talk to the guy. We haven't been able to get him in the room yet. We haven't been able to sit down in a suite out in L.A. or, you know, meet him out in New York. Are they waiting on this guy? Because, again, there's only two openings. So who are you competing against for all these great managerial candidates?
There's no competition.
So there's no rush.
Yeah.
But I think Grady Sizemore is sitting there. What? They like the guy a little bit. Molly's not happy with my answer. What's wrong with that?
Grady Sizemore? If you conclude that that's your manager for next year, forget it, Dustin. Are you nuts?
I'm saying what I believe the Sox are up to. That's not what
I
would do.
I look at the list, though, and I am underwhelmed, as we said yesterday. And the guys with experience, I don't know that they are going to hire because they simply haven't done it yet. Buck Showalter's not exactly very busy right now. If they wanted to hire him, I think they might have. Skip Schumacher is out there. He's not taking the Marlins job. The only other one open is the White Sox that we're aware of, unless something else is about to happen. They haven't hired him yet. Why? He's a reigning National League Coach Manager of the Year. So these other names are names that every baseball executive could love. Maybe only a baseball executive could love. They're going to be difficult sells to the fan base, regardless of whether it's Clayton McCullough, Donnie Ecker, Will Venable, or Grady Sizemore. Anybody who is on that list without previous managerial experience is going to be considered a gamble, unproven gamble. They could hire somebody perhaps this week. They want to get it done before the GM meetings November 7th in Scottsdale. That's not that far away. Maybe this week with the respite between the World Series and the AL and NLCS, they can talk to these guys like a Brady McCullough and make an announcement without having a press conference until after the World Series. I'm prepared to be underwhelmed.
This will be a pick six. There's your ball game.
Resale tickets for the World Series that starts Friday between the Yankees and the Dodgers were selling for $1,350 last night. Oh, it's almost double last year's World Series. How surprised are you about that? And what is the most you would spend for a ticket to a sporting event? And what event might that be?
I'm not surprised by this. I am dying to know what the television ratings will be. The last time the Yankees played the Dodgers was 1981, as we saw. I think MTV was starting. Tom Cruise was making his first movie. It was a long time ago. And Yankees-Dodgers is as good as it gets in terms of tradition at the World Series, the Fall Classic. What would be the most? We're spoiled because we have for years gone to sporting events for free as part of our jobs. So I don't know that I would go north of $500 for a sporting event. And that might be for a college football game, maybe somewhere. I don't think I would do that for an NBA game. I don't think that I would do that for a golf tournament. Somebody said the Masters. I think that that's probably as high as I would go. And I would probably go. I would go to a World Series game. If I couldn't get into a World Series game at Wrigley Field or in Chicago, I would pay at least that to get in to see. That would be the, that would be as far as I would go, probably.
500 wouldn't cover a table at Sports Corner. You know, I'm just saying, 500, it's just, unfortunately, this day and age, it's not going to get it done. You'd have to have a $500
I probably would watch it at home on my couch.
Okay, I'm just $1,000, you know, again.
I feel judged.
$1,000 from, $1,000 wouldn't cover what I'm going to say. I have two. The Masters on Saturday. Not Sunday, because I want to sit and watch it. I want to not miss a thing. But Saturday at Augusta, hearing all the roars and moving day there, that would be awesome. A place that maybe you guys have been that I have not been, that I've been watching on television for forever, is Cameron Indoor. A North Carolina Duke game right before the start of the ACC tournament. I think that's something to experience. Have you guys ever been there?
No.
Any desire to go there?
No.
No? Okay. Those are my two. Duke, North Carolina at Duke, or Saturday at the Masters for $1,000. Doesn't probably get me a sniff, but there it is.
Yeah, I think this is an impossible question for people like us. I mean, how many Super Bowls have you been to? You know.
A lot.
A lot. I mean, I've been to, you know, 17, 18 Super Bowls. I would not pay the money for a Super Bowl regardless of who was in it. I wouldn't. I just wouldn't pay that kind of money. You know, Dustin talking about going
hold
to
on, though.
The
hold
sports
on, though.
Corner. Go on.
You went to San Antonio to see the Ramblers.
I did.
That was expensive.
It wasn't cheap, but I went and saw the Ramblers in the Final Four. I got a
as a fan.
Yeah, but I didn't pay $1,000 for the tickets. Okay. I'm just trying
to help you out here.
I know you're trying to help, but you're trying to catch me in what I'm saying.
I'm not catching you.
What I'm saying is, Dustin, if it's $500 to get a seat at the Sports Corner, I would give the $500 so I could stay at home and watch the game in the privacy of my house. Like, I no longer seek that big experience because it's kind of a – I've been to, like, a ton of NBA Finals games. I've been to a lot of Super Bowls. I've been to a World Cup final. Like, I was sitting here thinking – would I do it for like a World Cup game? Would I do it if I flew to England and United were playing somewhere and I had a chance to watch them? I'd probably pay a healthy amount of money if I were there and they were in town and I had a chance to go see my childhood team.
Interesting.
I would do that. But I don't know that there's many that I would say I would really want to, you know.
Game 7, Blackhawks. And whoever, Stanley Cup final, can't get in with a press pass, I would pay.
I've seen the Stanley Cup finals.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm just saying, because of being a sports writer and covering all these events, I've been to the Cubs in the World Series, the Sox in the World Series. I've been to the you know, I've just been to everything.
I have too, but I'd like to do it without being on deadline.
Yeah, I understand that. I don't know. I mean, I think other than like an international sporting event that I traveled to go to, I can't think of one. Maybe it's hard. It's really hard. Like the Masters doesn't do that much for me. I can't. I'm befuddled. I think there are plenty of people that would play.
You're betwixt and between.
I am. And it's a tough question for me to answer. All right. We've got the extra point next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Allo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Allo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the Extra Point with Mullion Haw on 670 The Score.
What's the most pressing question facing the Bulls head coach, Billy Donovan, as the season is just over 24 hours away? What do you want to know when we talk to him at 725 this morning?
Looking forward to that conversation with Billy Donovan. I think the most obvious question to me would be, how has the progress or emergence of Lonzo Ball changed the way that he views his rotation? And maybe in some ways, depending on how much stock he's putting in Lonzo Ball's return, how his return affects his expectations. I think we all are amazed by how Lonzo Ball has looked like a guy who picked up where he left off in limited time, but he's fluid, he's instinctive, he is accurate, he's shooting well, he's protecting the basketball, he's doing all the things he did before, seeing the court, making the passes. So in 15 to 20 minutes a game, how can that help the Bulls, and how does that lengthen the rotation? I also want to know about, we know the Bulls are leaning into this whole idea of being a modern NBA 3-and-D team. We know they can do the three part, or at least shoot them. How about the D? Where's the D stand? And how does he plan to address these kinds of things that come up? Protecting the rim or protecting the three-point line? Is Patrick Williams really a viable option at the five when you go small ball? These kinds of questions, the lineup issues, and then big picture, just what you expect to get out of this season, which feels like you're going into it maybe not expecting to win, or at least that was the way things stood at training camp when we had AK and Billy in the performance studio. But I do think that things might have changed a little bit in the preseason. I wonder if they're a little further along than he thought.
I'm curious to hear if he's as surprised as we all are about Lonzo Ball after two preseason games. But the outside of that, the other thing, is 50 the goal? And when I say 50, not 50 wins, because I don't think that's possible. 50 threes a night? Is that like on the whiteboard in the dressing room, is like the number 50 in black written with a big red circle around it? You know, 50 threes. We are trying to attempt 50. Is that the goal?
That's a good question.
Yeah, you know, I think that to me, the pressing question facing the Bulls is not one that Billy can answer. I think the pressing question is, when are you making these trades? And how much different will your team look? And when will that be determined? What is the timing of this season? Because I think it's kind of two different seasons. I think it's going to be the Bulls when they have Zach LaVine and when they don't. And I have a very hard time figuring that he's going to be with them for the entire year. Same thing with Vooch. I think both those guys are going to be moved at some point or other. I think that the pressing questions to talk about with Billy are things like, how deep in the rotation does he go? I mean, we know who their starters are. This Lonzo Ball thing, does that change the way he thought he would be using his rotation? And, Billy usually kind of doesn't go more than 3-4 deep. Does he have to go 5 deep because of this? And how will it impact him if he wants to play a guy more than 5 minutes when he only has, 16 total and he's trying to – I just wonder how they're going to compute that, or does someone have that – but I think the larger question for this team is, what are they going to look like by the end of the year? And do they believe that they're going to look completely differently by the time you get there? I don't think he can talk about that, because I think that's speculation and that's not his job. He's running the day-to-day operation of the team. He's not figuring out who's going to be here or not here long term. I'm curious what happens with Josh Giddey. You know, they walked away from that that chance to extend him. I didn't think they were going to extend him. Why would you? He's got to prove what he can do, and they haven't gone. And they've got plenty of guys around that went through some contract negotiations and didn't get their rookie rookie contract picked up. And it didn't surprise me that they walked away from a chance to get a whatever it was 5-year $225 million deal. You just couldn't.
He wants $30 million a year.
Yeah, you couldn't do that.
Reports are that Josh Giddey wants $30 million a year.
I don't look
at some of the other contracts around the NBA signed yesterday, though. He may be in that ballpark.
Yeah, well, he may be, and they may be willing to pay it by after seeing him for a season.
Josh Giddey.
I don't think that you can just sort of project that to him without seeing him play first.
No.
For you.
Yeah, you've got to see him do what he is supposed to do, and that is let the offense run through him, find the open man, hit the occasional three.
Yeah, and I just wonder how that's going to work, how this team is going to work. And that's a good question about the three-point shooting. They obviously need a lot of that. Do they have set numbers in mind? And they're running the floor, and they look pretty good so far. We'll see. We'll see what it's like when real minutes count and when players will play the entire game. When the Bulls are working hard, and they're trying hard, and they've been in it in the end of games, but they don't have their group playing the big minutes, and they probably will when the season starts. So we'll figure that out. We'll get a chance to talk to Billy about it in a little bit. It's Mully and Haw. We're going to get to your calls. 312-644-6767, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.
Zero's on the clock, and it's over. And the Ravens, mighty impressive, win it by 10.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 the score. Yeah, Ravens looked really good. They got a couple of great offensive players, and they were on display last night. And Lamar Jackson showed his MVP form. And, boy, that running back, that guy is a load.
Derrick Henry in the first half, he started to wonder, what's wrong with him? He looks ticked off. He's not playing. He had four carries for 23 yards. What's John Harbaugh doing? Why isn't he playing? Who'd he tick off? I wondered. Mm-hmm. And then second half, I was like, well, maybe nobody. He ended up with 15 carries, 169 yards, an 81-yarder. Inflated his totals, but he earned every one of them. And Lamar Jackson continues to play at a high level, better than any quarterback in the NFL right now. He's on his way to being MV3. He had 5 touchdown passes without a pick. Mully, in his last 3 games, yeah, he's got 10 touchdown passes against 1 interception.
That's good, isn't it?
Yeah, that's good. And okay, he's got nearly 900 yards passing in that time frame. Goodness sakes, he is doing everything with his arm, with his feet, as a leader. It's a pretty good team they're playing. They're playing like right now. They're playing like and the Chiefs are undefeated, but the Ravens look like they could give them all they could handle.
Yeah, no question. I think that it was interesting to me to see Tampa lose not one, but both of their great wide receivers in that game. Mike Evans, early in the game, he was going for a touchdown. He kind of extended himself and he was getting tackled, and it looked like he did his hamstring. He already went into the game with a hamstring, and then he left the game with a hamstring. Mike Evans, a great player and a great wide receiver, and that hurt them a ton.
Yep.
And then Chris Godwin went down with an injury as well. So both guys leave the game. Baker Mayfield, they've had a good season, and he's doing a lot better than I think people might have thought when he wound up there. But uh, But, man, it was when you lose both your receivers, we mentioned earlier that Deebo Samuel is in the hospital with illness and Brandon Ayuk was lost for the year. You would think that that's a team that needs help at wide receiver.
They do need help at wide receiver.
I wonder, do
you think... The Chargers need help at wide receiver. Everybody needs help at wide receiver.
Do you think that these deals should have waited a week? Like, do you think that after seeing Devontae Adams go from whatever...
That was predestined and predetermined.
2-14 to a 2-14.
But he was going to the Jets because of Aaron Rodgers. You look at some of the other deals, maybe there could be a robust.
Amari Cooper would be worth more this morning.
But the Bills still would have been persuaded to get him. I mean, these are teams trying to look at the missing pieces. Yeah. And I don't know if the Bucks fit into that category. They're going to make a playoff run. I had no problem with Chris Godwin being in the game at that time. The problem I had with the Bucks was Todd Bowles not kicking the extra point when it was 41-24.
Yeah.
17. Kick the extra point, make it 16. You go for two, it's 15. What does it matter? They missed the two-point conversion. They made it a three-possession game.
Yeah.
There was still 4 minutes left. If you're going to make a run, make it as easy as possible. Three possessions, that was untenable at that point. That's the biggest mistake Todd Bowles made, not leaving Godwin in the game.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying that it was a mistake. I don't think they had a choice.
He's getting criticism for it.
Yeah, I just don't think he had a choice. All right, we've got to get to... back to the Bears, I want to talk about something we heard from Dustin this morning and then take that and play a little audio for you to question whether we believe in that in terms of injuries in this game. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.